Everyone has a story. You can call it the story of your life. But almost nobody has a true story. To get at the truth of your story is very difficult. We have the story that people tell us about ourselves. And we have the story we tell ourselves about ourselves. And these stories are constantly shifting. They're all made up of impressions. And every one of us ends up lost in the untruth of our story. Mostly, we begin to believe what others tell us, and we begin to believe what we keep telling ourselves. And so our story becomes very convoluted. And because we can't touch the truth, we tend to suffer a lot. The absolute truth of your own story would abolish all suffering. But getting to the absolute truth, you have to go through what appears to be the absolute lie of your story. Or the endless lies of your story. Not that they're lies exactly, but they are half-truths, fabricated truths, untruths, and some are outright lies. And so we weave together this tale that we present to the world as us. And almost every one of us knows it's not true, or it's not true enough. And so we suffer. It's funny because most of our stories are created to keep us from suffering, to make people like us, to make the world think we're better than we are. And because we know that most of them are not true, we don't believe them ourselves. We feel sort of funny about other people believing our story. There's a huge desire inside to be truthful, but we're very incapable of it. The truest story of our life is an impossible story to grasp. And that there, that true story, which will be meaningful, I really mean meaningless when I say it, is that there is no you and there is no story. But what do you do with that? Each of us is pretty invested in the idea that we do exist and that we do have a story and that that story is us. And so we spend a life defending the story. So what is that story? It's the series of impressions that accrue into a kind of litany of small tales about Adventures in Being. Some of these things accrue as memory, some through an experience of consciousness, experiencing being. This something arises that we all begin to interact with as infants, and it has pleasure and it has pain, it has story elements. We begin to go on these journeys. We start to crawl. We touch a light socket. Huge journey, huge episode, huge memory. We know something about ourselves. We know something about pain. We know something about the world outside us. It becomes a very big impression. A dog comes up to us. It's the same size as us. It's a monster, and it's beautiful. And it licks us, and we go, oh, and we love that dog, and we love that creature. Or the dog could come up to us and go, and we hate that creature, and we never want to go near another one. And we begin to fabricate all of these ideas about what the world is and who we are in it. Someone comes to you and says, oh, you're so cute. Oh, you're so cute. And they seem to like you for being cute. So you go, oh, I'm cute. Or you pick your nose and everybody goes, eesh. And you go, well, I don't like that. Or you do like that. Some people really like when people go, eesh. And you start to form this personality based on behaviors. And these activities start to evolve into a structure that you become deeply wedded to. And this structure has a principle that seems very interesting, and that is, it's very involved in growing. In fact, the whole beginning of your life is completely involved in growing. I was watching a little girl at the airport the other day pushing a cart with a little doll in it about this big, and she was in practice mode to be a mother. She was like 4 years old and she was already mothering. I could tell how she loved that doll, how it was covered in the little thing she was pushing, the stroller, and she was practicing motherhood. And I remember, we are practicing adulthood from the moment we're aware that that's coming. We practice, how do we want to be? And people tell us how you can be and how you shouldn't be. And all these forces are shaping this person that you are. And you are looking at the world and you are picking the things that are going to make you who you are. And then you get to be middle-aged and you are who you are. You are this dense configuration of stuff. And then middle age starts to fall away and moves toward old age, and all this stuff you are starts to change, and you don't even know who you are anymore. Your body isn't interacting with you the way it used to. The known becomes unknown. The truth becomes untruth. You have no concept of what you're doing, what's happening to you. All you have left toward the end is fear. And you have fear left because this assembly of you is disassembling. And you don't know who you are when it disassembles. You don't know who you will become. You don't know what you are at any point along the way, to be honest. All you know is that there's this thing that's come together and it's falling apart. And that is all absolutely fascinating and untrue. Because the truth is, and it's hard to state it exactly, but that something arises and falls away. And you take it and make it into something you want it to be with the best understanding of who you are, with the best sense of your own shaping and your own capacity to design this thing. And some of us are very good at that and some of us are very bad at it. We're learning all the way. we're trying to make this thing come together, and then it starts to fall apart, and we're still trying to hold it together, and finally it just completely dissipates, and there's nothing left. This is going to be the story for everyone, literally everyone. You will come together and you will fall apart. You will emerge as an entity for a period of what we call time, and then time will fall away and there will be nothing of you left except the stuff out of which you emerged. It doesn't go anywhere. It remains the primal ooze of existence. Existence is eternal. Existence is what it is, and we can't even name it. We can't even give it a shape. We can't even give it a place or a time, because it just is. And somehow our emergence into it has a structure called birth, existence as we understand it, and death. But existence doesn't go anywhere. It goes nowhere. We simply have a experience in it. We touch it. We are formed by it. We go through this extraordinary ride called birth and death, or life. We play with existence. We play with what is arising in front of us. We have zero control over what that is, but we are there with it, forming it as we go in the best way we can. And the only thing that seems to be at the core of this is an enormous desire to be there, an enormous desire to interact with it and to protect the very essence of this existence. We love this thing. We love it beyond understanding. It is so extraordinary, this truth and reality and being that we are. All we know, all any of us know at all, at any given time, is that we know nothing. We create the illusion of knowing, we create the illusion of meaning, we create the illusion of somethingness, we create the illusion of a life and a world. Not that it's really an illusion, because it partakes of reality, it partakes of what is at any given moment. What is not real is that we think we are that thing which is happening. We are the thing that's arising. Well, you are. But only in the most temporary way. It is so ephemeral. It is so momentary. The only thing you are is what is happening right this second. You have these brain waves or something that sort of remember where you've been. You have this something that's projecting where you might be. But the only thing you are is this thing right now. Right this second. So we're sitting here. Let's say we're sitting here. And we turn on the television and there is Michael Jackson. And Michael Jackson is dead. And the world is crying for 2 weeks because Michael Jackson is dead. There is truth. What is truth in that moment? Who's Michael Jackson to you? Who's Michael Jackson? He's a record. He's music that comes through the airwaves. He's a picture on a television tube. He is something that is on a piece of paper called a newspaper with a headline that registers, Michael Jackson is dead. Where is the truth? You don't know Michael Jackson. You've never met the guy, probably. Even if you met him, what does that mean? But this person is dead, and what you are getting as information is just information. Where is the truth? The truth is, to the degree that you understand it, a piece of paper in front of you when you open it says in print, Michael Jackson is dead. The television, which is a piece of electronic something in a corner of a room in your life, has this image of Michael Jackson. That's the only truth. The idea that the story of Michael Jackson is real is something you have agreed upon. with all the other people around you and made it real. And so you react to reality. And this becomes more than just Michael Jackson, the war in Afghanistan, the health care bill, Obama's journey in the White House. All of this stuff, what is all of this? It is story. It is just story. Does it have reality? Yes, of sorts. But what is its reality to you? I remember when Bobby Kennedy was shot, and Rudy said, there are people out there sobbing in the street for Bobby Kennedy, and they've never met Bobby Kennedy. He said they wouldn't cry for their own grandmothers. They wouldn't care if their own best friend died in the same way they care about Bobby Kennedy. What is this insanity, this illusion that people carry about life? Why can't they function in the immediacy of their lives? Why can't they find an opening, a true opening, to what's right in front of them that has content and meaning? And why are they giving themselves over to the abstractions of the outer world? It's our nature to do that. It's easier to cry for Bobby Kennedy than to cry for your grandmother. It's easier to open to the illusion of somebody that you've never met than the truth of the person you know, the immediacy of the person in front of you. Spiritual work, the journey into truth, is to truly be with what is in front of you, what is right there, what are you facing, and to really open to that in depth. And what's the first thing you discover? It's really fascinating. You, who are a mixture of unknown elements that even you don't understand, are facing another person who is also a mixture of unknown elements that they don't understand. They are projecting one set of ideas to you, you're projecting one set of ideas to them, and they meet somewhere in the middle, and there's no truth. It's two illusions confronting each other. Two illusions. You don't know another person because they don't know themselves. You don't know yourself at all. And these two projections are intersecting, and you're calling that the world. But when you start to really go deep, deep, deep into your meditation, into your private sitting, you go into yourself, you start to let go of this illusion of you. You start to let go of the story of you. You just let the pieces fall away, and you enter into what? Into this moment. Forget everything that came up to it and everything that's coming, this moment. And if you really get quiet, really get quiet, and let go of your mind for a little bit, your mind, which is projecting the future and relating to the past, just starts to go away, and you feel this presence, this absolute still presence. And that presence gets quieter and quieter and seems in its way to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And as it does so, you feel a kind of infinite, eternal presence of self. You can't define it because it's without mind, it's without name, it's without personality. It just is. And it is profoundly real. It's the only thing you know as real. It is you. It is absolutely you. There you are. No name, no personality, no desire, no fear, just you. And then as you sit with the person across from you, you understand if they were able to do the same thing, to just sit still and let go of their name and personality and all the bullshit they're throwing at you and just get just as quiet, and they became themselves, there's you facing yourself. Because the stillness at the core of each one of these phantasmagorias of personality, the stillness at the core is the same stillness. It's the same being. It's one being. And you know that profoundly. So when you stare at another person and you move past their story, past your own story, what you have is truth and truth looking at each other. You have oneness. You have reality, pure reality. And what is the reaction to that pure reality? The closest I can come to describing it is love. It loves itself. It loves itself. It therefore loves you. Two people presenting free of themselves, free of their illusion, free of their drama, free of the past, free of the future, are sitting as one self. And they are sitting in a state of love. That's as close as we get to truth, and as close as we get to reality. That's the journey that all of us are on. All of us are walking toward this place that we already are in. And that is a place of profound emptiness, profound truth and reality. It is our being. We get to play in the world of manifestation, and we get to step back from it. Or, if you will, rise from the core of our stillness into the activity of manifestation, and then return through meditation and ultimately through death back to the absolute of our existence. We're all on that journey. This thing we call death is a return. The thing we call meditation is a return. It's the same idea. It's the same thing. The only way you return to the center and core of your own being is to let go of your attachment to, your addiction to, this miasma of storytelling that we are all caught in. Meditation is the practice to do that. Death is the final experience of that. Death is no easier than meditation. People who die without meditating have to go through their own learning process, if you will, back to the still center. The Tibetans call that the journey through the bardo. As you're coming back down through the untruth of story, you have to unweave yourself from all of that, detach from all of that, and come back to this. If you meditate in your lifetime, you've done that. You've practiced all of that detachment. You've practiced the letting go of story, the seeing through of your own illusion and everybody else's illusion, of your bullshit and everyone else's bullshit. You've already done it. You've already made the journey back to the source of your own being. So when your physical death occurs, it's not a big deal particularly. All you do is go back to where you've always been. In fact, you're living a life of eternal being. You're living where you've always been. That's the ride we're all on, every one of us in this room. All of your preoccupation with your stuff, your depression, your sadness, your hope, your ambition, all of that stuff, it's just your drama. How much of it is real? It's only real because your base of reality makes it real. Because you bring reality to it. But it's not real. What's real is your true being. And everything else is just this extraordinary universe in which we exist. We are all part of this remarkable thing that none of us can or ever will understand. It is not comprehensible. But you are it. At the very core of who you are. So enjoy the ride as best you can. There's no way to doubt that you're on it. We're all sitting here right now talking about it in a very real way. This is it. You can love it or hate it. You can make it anything you want. You can pick this piece of it or that piece of it. You can pick the ugliness, you can pick the beauty. You can do it any way you want. It's completely your choice. This is completely yours. You are creating your universe. You are absolutely in charge. You, as the godlike being that you truly are making life what it is. And you can turn it around at any moment. At any moment. I've said this many times before. The life you have is the life you have created. In some ways, the life you have chosen. Accept it. Embrace that. If you don't like it, make it different. If you can't change the outer circumstance, change the inner circumstance. I mean, you can't always change the outer. It's very big. It took you a long time to get there. So if you can't change the outer, go inside and do the work that changes how you relate to it. That response to life is just as important as the life itself. How you respond, you do control. Open and love it. Close and hate it. Whatever you want. Your ride. Any questions? Tara.
Thank you for the tour, for the class, and for your talk. I have a friend who is suicidal with it, and I'm wondering, we're doing a lot of conscious talk and prayer. I'm wondering if there is something that you could tell me that's a good practice of prayer or meditation to do.
Your brother can tell you. You know?
And I was curious about your feeling about that, what happens when someone does
It's a complicated choice, committing suicide, and different cultures relate to it differently. You know, Japan, it's an honorable thing. In the West, it's a terrible thing. In one way or another, I think it's how you do it that determines it. You know? I mean, I had a friend who committed suicide, and he came back to his girlfriend as a spirit and said, I had no idea that in killing myself, I was going to die. I don't even understand that, but it hits me in a big way. You know, this old idea that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem, that hits me a lot. I think it's basically a very difficult journey back to the center. I think you just go on a very unpleasant ride. But, you know, life was already unpleasant for this person, probably, because they picked the ugly, unpleasant pieces. You know, most of us don't take responsibility for that. We really think it was all foisted upon us. You know, I don't know how to argue with that exactly. I mean, some people really do have lives that are more difficult than others. But every life, no matter how difficult it is, comes out of this place of unbearable love and beauty. And if it gets really ugly and terrible, I keep thinking there's something you can do. People I've known who've gotten really stuck in really awful places, I keep thinking there's something else you can do, including serving others. People usually in that place are so locked into their own suffering that it never dawns on them, or they can't hear the idea that take your pain and turn it into service. You can always help another human being. It changes everything when you do that. But you get that message, getting that message across to somebody who is that densely preoccupied with their suffering, it's very hard to make that known. So it's a ride. You know, I mean, some rides are awful. You know, life is intense and brutal, as you know. I mean, it really can be just so unpleasant. But how you respond to that shapes the experience and can change the universe. So it's really a choice. You can pray for that soul. Does that get through? Maybe. I don't know. Why not? You know, say prayers. I mean, you know, the Tibetans will sit for 49 days with people and chant and chant and chant, and God knows if that person has consciousness left at all, they're hearing somebody trying to say something good about them that they may never have heard their whole life. That'll help, you know. But even what people say about you, in a way, is conditioned by you. You know, I mean, you can't condition it completely. It's really fascinating, you know, that the person you are elicits responses from other people. And many of us are dancing to that because we care desperately about it, and others of us have given up needing to care about it, because sometimes, no matter what you do, people are going to still not like you for the way your hair is or the way your nose is or whatever that is. So freeing yourself from the world is learning to detach from all that stuff. Suicide is a way of being totally attached. And the only way they're looking for freedom is to kill the self. But the self is immortal. You can't kill it. And the first experience of killing yourself is that not only have you not died, that you're still there, but you're there with everything that you were left with, and now you have nothing in the concrete sense to work with. There's nothing you can do about it. So you unravel back to the core, and I think it's a very slow unraveling for some of those people. It's called hell, probably, you know, purgatory, whatever. You go back into this place where you finally arrive at the stillness again. But it's a long journey. I've been on that journey. It's a long, billions of years in terms of, because you're still thinking you're in time. The unraveling of self back to the core is hard. Pardon?
Why is it honorable?
Because people, and it makes a big difference. People have felt for centuries in Japan that if you do something dishonorable to the world or to the community or to your boss or to whoever, that the only way to regain honor is to take yourself out of the world. And I think if you do it with that kind of attitude, highly conscious attitude, I think you enter into the space of return, if you will, with a deep consciousness. And I think it speaks to you very profoundly as you make that journey back. That's my guess. I may be completely off, but I think it is. I think attitude has a lot to do with it. George,
I just feel like we're always editing our own story. In that sense, that meditation is a little bit of the editing process.
Yeah, it depends on how you use meditation.
Just like if you hear your voice on a tape recorder. That doesn't sound like you. You know, you never have the reality of who you really are.
Right. No, I think meditation is a potential help in all of this. It really is. If you can really let go of the immersion in the noise of your own sort of personality and mind, and meditation allows that, but if you can really do that, it will give you perspective. It will give you perspective on the personality that you imagine yourself to be. And because it gives you perspective, you can actually reposition how you live, reposition how you think about yourself, reposition attitude about self, and really recreate who you are. And if you go really deep, you will allow this pure life energy to sort of recreate you by itself. But most of us are manipulating it even as we meditate. We're recreating it along the lines of repositioning the story so that people will like us a little more. We're not really going to the place where it, in a sense, takes over. True surrender, true deep surrender, this powerful source of being does it for you. It knows. It's doing it anyway. Trust me, even all of the bullshit we're going through is part of this extraordinary knowing. The core of our being is beyond intelligent. It's beyond our understanding. It knows what to do. And our whole life really is a manifestation of it. And the moment you realize that, the moment you get that all these stupid choices you've made and all the things that you've done and everything everybody's saying about you is, in a sense, part of this design, part of what's wanted to be, the minute you get that, it's like, oh, you're free.
But, you know, I get it intellectually in the sense that I know I'm trying to cling to this reality of who I am, which is a complete illusion because everything's changing constantly. And we're always resisting the change.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. If this were easy, we'd all have done it. You know, Buddha would say, said out of the 2 million people who try to do this, one gets it. It's not easy. It's not easy because we're so addicted to it. But the fact that you have been here year after year, that you keep coming, that you're still part of this process, is a commitment to this process. That's all I can say. And, you know, I don't know if and when it will take place. I don't think there are guarantees here. But I do know when it starts to take itself apart, which I will guarantee you that, when it starts to finally disassemble, which will happen after you leave, you will go, oh, that's what I've been doing all these years. That's what this was. And chances are, and I think this is very likely for you, George, at that moment, you will go, yes, yes. And that's all you have to do. Yes. Because it all comes down to, really, in the last moment of your life, you have a choice. You have two things, yes or no. If you say yes, whoosh, realization. You say no, it's the long journey back. And if you've done enough long journeys back, I know I have, you finally go, I don't need that anymore. That's a long 3 million years or 3 billion years back to yourself. Because that journey, I'm telling you, the journey back into the core of you is full of time elongated in ways you can't imagine. You don't want it if you don't have to. So all you would finally figure out in this manifested state is you can go, I want to surrender. I want to surrender. And Rudy, that's his whole teaching. I wish to surrender. And finally, there comes a point where you do.
How do you balance surrendering and letting go of attachment with the realities of the world that you have to take care of yourself and make money so that you surrender to what's in front of you? And
that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. You go, this is the reality of the world. I have to do this and make money. There you go. You surrender to that. What do? You get a job. Or you try to. And then if no job presents itself, which is the awful part of our economy right now, what do? Well, you collect bottle caps or whatever you do. I mean, you have to find something to survive until the world tells you you are at the end of your rope. There's no survival left, which happens. And then you die. But up until that point, this unbelievable surge of reality that works in you has one primary principle, which is to keep you going. That's what it is. So you do it, but you do it with a kind of detachment, with a kind of clarity, with a kind of willingness, if you will, to say yes to life, to the thing that's in front of you. Most of us say no. I don't like it that way. You know, you don't want the thing that's in front of you. You always want the thing that's off to the side or 4 days away. And when you do that, you know, life may try to bring it to you because that's what life tries to serve you. It really, believe me, life tries to serve you. But because we're so complicated and rejecting, it can't. You know, if you tell life I want a hamburger, and what's in front of you right now are spare ribs, and you say, I don't want spare ribs, I want a hamburger, you know, it will try to bring you the hamburger, but it might be 2 days later, at which point you then wish you had spare ribs, and the hamburger just arrived, and life worked so hard to bring you the hamburger. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we're so incapable of having the thing in front of us, and life really, in its effort to give us and satisfy our desires, can't satisfy a desire that's 4 days old. So it's really it's an endless dance, and we create very complicated and difficult lives and angry lives. Where was my hamburger when I asked for it? You know, is there any appreciation that life finally brought you one? No, because it was late. And we live these horrible existences where we don't get what we want. But you know, Rolling Stones said clearly, you get what you need, and you get what you need when you need it. And if you're smart enough to recognize it, you will live in recognizing, honoring, and doing the work you need to do to meet the need. And then it works. It works in its own way. Everything will keep working until the moment that life says you're done. which can happen like that or slowly. But when it's done, it no longer gives you what you want, I'll tell you that. Because it starts to really take it away in very unpleasant terms. But if you're even smart enough to recognize that that too is part of the process, and you surrender and you surrender and you surrender, it's all about liberation. It's all about freeing you from this world of addiction into the world of just being. Does that help? Anybody else? Okay. No class next weekend, but the weekend after that, and the 2 weekends after that, there is class. So I know it gets complicated here, but we'll keep it going as best we can. Thank you guys for coming.